Blog Talk Radio.
Have you been searching for a conservative talk radio show that covers the issues you are interested in? Well, search no more. That show is Stand for Truth Radio, and I'm your host, Susan Knowles. We'll be talking about all the issues that matter to you. Our guests are political figures, military men and women, best-selling authors, and even political conservative comedians. So join us every Monday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern on WNJC 1360 AM and Stand for Truth.
I'm your host, Susan Knowles. You can find all the information on my website in regards to the articles I write and the past podcasts of this show. They're available at SusanKnowles.com. I hope you go there and check them out. I want to let you know that Stand for Truth is now being carried on WNJC 1360 AM, FreedomInAmericaRadio.com, ThePunditPress.com, and shrmedia.com. So we're so glad to have them carrying our show, and so glad that you can be here to join us tonight. We're going to be talking about the topic of technocracy and how it's impacting your life each and every day. Now, you're probably wondering, I don't even know what technocracy is, so how is that impacting my life? Well, we're going to talk about that tonight in detail, and at the end of the show, you're probably going to be just absolutely floored by the information that you are hearing. So I want to get right to it and introduce our guest tonight. The dark horse of the New World Order is not communism, socialism, or fascism. It is technocracy. With meticulous detail and an abundance of original research, Patrick M. Wood uses his new book, Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, to connect the dots of modern globalization in a way that has never been seen before so that the reader can clearly understand the globalization plan, its perpetrators, and its intended end game. In the heat of the Great Depression during the 1930s, prominent scientists and engineers proposed a utopian energy-based economic system called technocracy that would be run by those scientists and engineers instead of elected politicians. Although this radical movement lost momentum by 1940, it regained status when it was conceptually adopted by the elitist Trilateral Commission in 1973 to become its so-called New International Economic Order. Sounding familiar? In the ensuing 41 years, the modern expression of technocracy and the new international economic order is clearly seen in global programs such as Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, Green Economy, Councils of Governments, Smart Growth, Smart Grid, Total Awareness Surveillance Initiatives, and more. Wood contends that the only logical outcome of technocracy is scientific dictatorship. His website is technocracyrising.com. And again, as I said, his book is called Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. So let's welcome our guest, Patrick Wood, to the show. Welcome, Patrick.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me back on. I always enjoy it.
Great. I am so glad you're here. I know the last time you came on was late last year, and we talked about pretty much in depth about your book, but it was more of an overall general type look at your book and what technocracy was about. And I want to really get into the specifics, because when people leave the show tonight, I really want them to know about technocracy, what it's all about, and how it is truly impacting their lives on a daily basis. But before we start that, why don't you give us sort of a, if you can, a broad general definition of technocracy, and we'll go from there.
You bet. The easiest way to kind of peg what technocracy is to realize, number one, that it was a historical movement back in the 1930s when it was at the depths of the Great Depression, and a lot of people believed that capitalism was dead. And certain prominent scientists and engineers got together, rose up, if you will, to define a new economic system that was intended to replace capitalism altogether. And this new economic system would be based on energy rather than on currency or price-based economics that we know. In other words, free enterprise and capitalism would be completely jettisoned, and it would be replaced with this energy-based economic system that they called technocracy. It was a little utopian for sure, and even for that time. Fortunately, it didn't really get serious traction back in that time. That probably is because there was no institutional money behind it. There was no Rockefellers, no Carnegies, no Ford Foundation, and so on. They were just the scientists and engineers themselves that cooked this up. Nevertheless, there was over 500,000 card-carrying members of technocracy back in the 1930s, and there was a lot more than that that were just sitting on the edge looking at it saying, this sounds pretty good to me. So it was a huge movement, huge social movement back then that died out, and it was picked up again in the 1970s, in my opinion, by the elitist Trilateral Commission. And when they advertised their so-called New International Economic Order, even myself and my co-author Anthony Sutton in that day did not really realize, we had no knowledge of technocracy at all. But now, looking back from today's perspective, I can see very clearly that the original goal of the Trilateral Commission was to implement technocracy. And we have it all around us today. And the reason I say that and know that is because the initiatives that we have today, like you read some of them at the beginning of the program, these initiatives match ever so closely to the original technocracy specification. And it just basically removes all doubt that these things just happen by chance and, you know, somebody's just wandering around in the dark, you know, making up policies as they went. Didn't happen that way at all. So I lay the whole modern movement at the feet of the Trilateral Commission in any case, and I'll stop there with that simple definition. And
yeah, and I was going to say that, you know, if you look at the history of progressives, you know, when they start something, it can take a very long time for it to catch on, but they never really give up. So they may have started it back in the, you know, the 1940s, and it kind of died out, or 1930s, and it kind of died out in the 40s. But that isn't that really, if you look back at things from the perspective that you have now, you know that that doesn't mean it's over, that they just keep subtly, slowly, and deliberately moving until they get that program going. And it really is apparent, like you said, that today that's what we're seeing. It's all around us.
It is all around us, hiding in plain sight.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to kind of bring out some things. Let's start with what's been in the news lately, you know, with Baltimore. Now, looking at Baltimore, you know, it looks just kind of on its face. People are saying racial issues, and that's exactly you know, what the news is and how they want you to see it. What, if anything, is behind Baltimore that has to do with technocracy?
Well, you know, I think maybe we need to look at it at a some kind of a higher level, or at least incorporate some other issues into just Baltimore. We have the issue on the southern border right now. Our border is completely wide open. We have a racial tension in our country, thanks to our current president. There's an article yesterday that said that 96% of Americans are expecting more racial strife this year. You know, it's great,
yep.
Right?
Right.
So this is all over the country. This is not just Baltimore. This racial tension has been aggravated by our president and our former, well, not just, you know, not just the Department of Justice, but I mean the whole dominant meme in the executive branch for the last 8 years or 6 years, 7 years has been to divide and radicalize the race issue. And so now we're worse off than we've ever been in my lifetime, for certain. Race relations today are train wrecked all over the nation. And it's a powder keg. And I believe this is the strategy that has been implemented on purpose to create this division so that there might be a good dose of civil unrest coming down the road. And I'd like to add on top of that, the current events that are happening down in Texas, where known members of ISIS have set up camp south of the Texas border and are infiltrating Texas, United States. And we had the recent shooting down there that's been identified now, or the shooters died, of course, but those shooters have been identified as having been Muslim terrorists who received their marching orders from a commander of ISIS in Mexico. And so here we have, all of a sudden, terrorism is knocking on our door. In addition to racial tension, now we got terrorism knocking on our door with people, you know, wanting to kill Americans directly. And you add to that one more thing with this so-called Jade Helm military exercise that's coming this summer especially to Texas, Arizona, Southern California, and Utah. And it's just interesting that there will be troops patrolling the streets of Texas while ISIS is attempting to penetrate the Texas border. I see this at this point as an overall strategy to radicalize and militarize the American landscape in a way that it never has been in the history of our country. We've got the police forces of America have been delivered these high-tech military-grade weapons and personnel carriers and tanks with machine guns. They've been militarized every way you can look at it, with fancy firearms and protective gear and the night vision goggles and all this kind of stuff that they would ordinarily use like in Afghanistan or Iraq. All of those things now have permeated our nation, and now the military is going to be walking the streets during the Jade Helm exercise. And sorry for the long explanation here, but I at this point I'm looking at all of these things together. And I'm asking myself some questions. Why would this kind of a policy be carried out even in just the last couple of years, which that's about where it's been? How do these things relate, and what does it have to do with anything, with technocracy, with the so-called scientific dictatorship that we see coming? And the bad news to that is, it's not immediately obvious if there's any connection at all, except to say that this president is the most radical president we've ever had. He's the most devious and underhanded president we've ever had. And he's completely controlled by members of the Trilateral Commission. So you have to figure that if they didn't want this to happen, it wouldn't be happening. to a large degree. It wouldn't have taken much to seal off our southern border. It wouldn't take much to go down into Mexico and cooperate with the Mexican military to wipe out the ISIS base that's sitting right there in their country 8 miles below the Texas border. They could do these things. They could shut off illegal immigration, catch the bad people, send them out of our country, and don't ever let them return again. But they completely ignored those policies to make sure that our southern border is leaking like a sieve. And now that they brought ISIS to our border, we're going to pay for it. That's all I can say. We're paying
Absolutely.
For it.
Well, and it's kind of like we have something that's occurring inside the United States and occurring outside of the United States. It's kind of like when you surround an enemy. You kind of do it on all sides so that there's no place to go. And that's kind of what I see happening. And I want to go back to your point a little bit. You know, I see what you said about radicalizing the military. You know, here's Al Sharpton now coming into Baltimore and saying, you know, I think the federal government should take over the police and they should run the police forces. You know, there's no secret that Al Sharpton and Obama are friends. You know, that Al Sharpton owes all this money in back taxes and, you know, may be called upon, you know, just as allegations here, may be called upon by the president to do some talking for him because of the taxes that he owes. And another thing that to point out what you were talking about, you know, you have the leadership in Baltimore, the mayor I'm specifically talking about, who in the very beginning when all of this started comes out and says we're going to give these protesters space to destroy. You know, since when do you hear sort of, to me, like they're green light, encouraging words. Go ahead and do what you want to do. We'll wait until you get done. You know, when do you hear that coming out of leadership of anybody in the government? And now you're hearing it more and more. And with all of this happening, even with what happened in Garland, Texas yesterday, with the two guys getting killed, thank goodness the two terrorists were killed, Obama's quiet. Doesn't come out and talk about anything. I haven't heard anything.
No, and I think this, honestly, I think this president's agenda from the get-go has been to utterly destroy the fabric of our nation. And so far he's done a darn good job. I can't imagine that he could have done any better had he had a different strategy to do it. But,
Absolutely.
You know, there's a whole aspect to throw on top of this that many people are now predicting a rather imminent economic collapse. Not just in our country, but globally as well. And if there is an economic collapse in our country, there will be guaranteed civil unrest. I absolutely would stake my life on it.
Mm-hmm.
And you add on top of that, you add that to the top of all the racial tension that we have in our country, where many of those people, if not most, are on food stamps and, you know, get all of their sustenance from the government. If there is economic collapse, it will drop those people out of society first. They'll be the ones to
mm-hmm.
go first. And they'll be the ones that are going to be the most angry. And so there's another incentive for the government to bring U.S. troops, you know, our military to the streets to enforce order, to bring order, you know, back to the country. You know, this economic collapse people are talking about, I don't think they're getting it, honestly. They may be right in some of their economic thinking, but what they don't see is that there are two major economic systems in the world vying for control of the world economy as fight to the death. One is technocracy and the other is capitalism. And there is a moral hazard that exists right now with these global elite to give capitalism a good old push off the cliff so that Humpty Dumpty will fall and get broken to bits on the rocks below so that they can implement the system of technocracy that they've been trying so hard to put in place for the last 40 years. The reason I say that is because the head of climate change at the United Nations, she's the number one person in climate change at the UN, she said in a press release back in early February, point blank, and I quote, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we are setting ourselves the task of intentionally within a defined period of time to change the economic development model that has been reigning for at least 150 years since the Industrial Revolution. Close quote. This is stunning.
Can't get much more clear. Yeah, you can't get more clear than that.
So if this is the plan, if this is the plan to kill off capitalism once and for all and replace it with this so-called green economy, which is just warmed over technocracy from the 1930s, then yes, there's not only going to be an economic collapse on the horizon, but it's going to be one very possibly that these people are actually creating themselves to make sure that capitalism dies and stays dead this time, unlike the 1930s when it did come back, when we entered World War II. This time, capitalism may be able to stay down because of technocracy that's implemented around the world. And this is not something that America needs to be concerned about. This is the global problem as well.
Right.
So why would they want to put trees on our street? This is another good reason. If they see this economic collapse coming, you know there's going to be big trouble, big trouble.
Well, and when we, in Baltimore, when they finally did enact a curfew, everybody was all upset about a curfew after a couple of days. Like, we're adults. Why do we need a curfew? But the next step, and even at that time, you couldn't be on the streets past a certain hour. And even the media were getting called out, and they were being told to get off the streets. And they're like, wait a minute, I have First Amendment right to be here. You can't tell me to get off the street. I'm working, and First Amendment right. But, what happens, the next step to that is martial law. That's when your rights, constitution, go out the window and you no longer have constitutional rights. If you no longer have that and the law of, whoever's in charge is in place, they're going to do whatever they want to do. And they're going to be able to do that unless there's, some type of other uprising. But I'm just saying, they'll be in charge and they can implement any program that they want to.
They can, and in every technical sense, Baltimore experienced martial law by the fact that they did have a curfew. That's part
right.
and partial. It suspended the constitutional guarantees and said, you people stay in your homes. If you're not, we're going to arrest you and bust you right there on the spot. And so that was an exercise in martial law. Even if it was not called that, even if it was not formally declared, that's exactly what it was. And the same thing happened in Ferguson as well. So now you have two precedents set in our nation where martial law could be implemented. And I fully expect that that the exercise of martial law will be carried out with the Jade Helm military exercise this summer. Even if it's not declared for a real emergency, they're going to practice their military operations as if martial law were in place. So the only reason people train is because they're expecting real life situations in the future that where that training will be used, and they can argue whatever they want to argue on why they're doing this Jade Helm exercise. But come on, we're not stupid here. The military has had bases to train on for the last 200 years, and certainly since World War II. Every branch all services have their own dedicated training grounds. They have little miniature cities that they can do door-to-door operations in. They have gunnery ranges. They have airplane, missile ranges and stuff. They can practice every conceivable thing that they want to do without ever touching the soil of American civilian territory. But now they're throwing that all out, saying, no, we need more. We need to practice our maneuvers on the real deal. We need to get right out there in the communities, civilian territory, and we need to use that as a training ground. Yeah, we can't be naive about this.
And I think a lot of people still to this day don't know that that's coming. They don't know about the exercises. They hear the name Jade Helm, and it doesn't make sense to them. So hopefully there will be more people who listen to this program and listen to other programs that you've been on and absolutely will read your book. And I want to say that here. Everybody needs to get this book and read it. I've read it cover to cover. It's important not only to hear this, but to buy this book, to to read it and keep it. You're going to need this as a handbook or a guide. It's very important because there's still things I have to go back and look up because I see something now and I'm thinking, well, okay, I know I read about that in Technocracy Rising. Let me go back and look that up and find out what's going on. So you absolutely need to do that. Now, I want to move on a little bit to Hillary Clinton. Since she's there as one of the candidates, I want to talk a few minutes about her. And we talked about, we've heard lately about her latest speech at the 2015 Women's Summit, in which she talked about America needing to transform their deep-seated religious beliefs and culture. I mean, this sounds so much like Obama. It's just sort of a continuation, but I think even worse. Can you talk about how that's connected to Technocracy?
I certainly can. One of the poster boys for Technocracy is a Trilateral Commission member by the name of John Podesta. We talked about him before, but he worked for the President Obama up until just recently when he left the employ in Washington and he went to work as the chief of staff for Hillary Clinton's campaign, and he also is her campaign manager. So he's the number one guy right now that's directing her whole policy of her campaign and everything she says and does in public. Well, John Podesta worked at the United Nations for the climate change, for a big high-level panel of climate change leaders from around the world. And when that initiative was terminated, he went to work for Obama, worked for him for about a year. The New York Times concluded that back in November of last year, that it was indeed John Podesta who single-handedly created Obama's climate change policy and also gave him the executive orders to write to implement it. In other words, this man is the chief architect of climate change policy in America. And now he has gone and bonded himself to Hillary to drive her campaign, to be her chief of staff. And if she were lucky enough to get elected, I wouldn't put anything out of context here. She certainly could get elected. If she does, Podesta undoubtedly would have a key role in her administration. And this is a guy who makes Al Gore look like a Boy Scout as far as global warming and green stuff is concerned. So there's Hillary. You know, that's all I can say about Hillary. She is at this point, as far as the Trilateral Commission is concerned, she is, quote unquote, the chosen, right? She's the chosen
right.
one. Now, whether she gets it or not is another issue, but then you have Jeb Bush on the other side. He's the chosen right now of the Republican camp. So it's going to be dicey.
Well, and to get back to you, what you were saying about John Podesta, if he gets in and has a key role, then he can implement all kinds of commissions and regulations and everything else concerning climate change. And
this man is a destroyer.
Yeah.
He's a destroyer.
Yeah.
That's all you can say.
Well, and I don't think people understand that, you know, when you have these commissions and all those people that are kind of put in place, like the FCC or whatever, they start controlling things without the necessity of passing a law to give them authority to do whatever or having to vote for what they're saying. They can just implement whatever laws they want, and they become the law of the land that you have to follow.
That's correct. And people don't really understand the reason why Congress is impotent as far as the executive branch is concerned. There is no concern among these technocrats that Congress is not participating in these decisions. They hate the politicians, generally speaking, because they view them as buffoons who don't even understand the technology that they're making decisions and policies over. So they figure that they're perfectly justified in completely doing an end run around Congress anytime they want to, you know, do something that furthers technocracy. They're just doing it. They're not stopping to ask permission before or after they've done it. And Congress so far has not put up a stop sign and said, no more of this, guys. Stop it.
Yeah, Yeah, Congress is kind of going along with it. I mean, one, I think a perfect example is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that trade agreement with Asia-Pacific that Obama wants. And what is so odd about the whole thing is that the Democrats oppose it, and even the most progressive liberal on the planet, Elizabeth Warren, came out. She wants the documents declassified so everybody can look at them. And basically, the Republicans are saying, oh, no, let's fast-track this, and let's give the president any authority he needs to get this done. And John Boehner, who people had an ability to get rid of and vote out and did not, is one of those people coming out. I think it was today I read an article, him saying, come on, you know, Hillary, get behind this. You know, the president needs to have the ability to do this. And I know you've kind of said you're not sure about it, but, you know, if you want to get elected, you need to get behind this. And you other Democrats, you need to get behind this too. So talk to us about what all of that would mean with the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is being negotiated by the U.S. Trade Representative. His name is Michael Froman. Surprisingly, he also is a member of the Trilateral Commission. So this whole thing, this is just like NAFTA. NAFTA was negotiated by a member of the Trilateral Commission as well. Her name was Carla A. Hills. She was the undisputed architect of NAFTA. And look what NAFTA has done to us. It was trilateral policy from the get-go, and this TPP business is also trilateral policy. It has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with their new international economic order, which I, of course, propose as technocracy in my book. And this is just a subterfuge at this point to put this through. My guess is they wouldn't stand a ghost of a chance to pass the TPP agreement, partnership agreement, unless they were to implement fast-track legislation first. And I realize most people don't have a clue what that means, but the most important thing is that it reduces the threshold of a successful vote from 66% in the Senate to 50% in the Senate. It wouldn't stand a chance to pass if they had to get 2/3 of the votes in the Senate to pass. It just wouldn't do it. But if they have 50%, they know they can cram it down the Senate's throat and get it passed no matter what. And they'll bring out all the political hammerheads to pound on these guys until they get enough votes. They'll get all they need is 50% plus one, and it's a done deal. But this is a sovereignty killer. Everything we know about the TPP right now will mean absolute near certain death for America in the long run. And again, I haven't seen the document itself. Nobody has really, except for the senators and congressmen who apparently could go in and look at the documents in a closed room, but they couldn't make copies. They couldn't bring them out. So, you know, some people have some idea of what's in there. And so far, everything that's leaked out is like, oh my gosh, this can't happen. It just cannot happen. And like you said, yet the Republicans are pushing for fast track and the Democrats are pushing against it. I could have given Elizabeth Warren's speech. It was so good before the Senate. She hit,
right.
I mean, I hate to say that. I don't agree with her on anything else in the universe, but
right.
She nailed it. She nailed it, Susan. She said exactly what needed to be said for the reasons that needed to be said. And I think some Republicans, because of that speech, said, I can't possibly agree to do anything else except go for fast track, because if Elizabeth Warren is against it, I have to be for it.
And I can tell you one thing. If Elizabeth Warren finds it concerning enough or scary enough, you know, to want documents declassified, And her being the most liberal progressive on the face of the planet, that's all I need to know how bad this really is. I mean, seriously, if anybody doesn't want to take a look at it, and stop this, they're out of their minds. We've been talking about the Trilateral Commission. Give us a brief definition of that, so the people that don't know what that group is, they will know.
Absolutely. Started in 1973 by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski. They got one-third of their membership from Japan, one-third from North America, and one-third from Europe. It was the first truly international organization that was formed with an action plan in mind to specifically create a new international economic order. And they got together important people in these three regions. There was a few politicians, and there was some academics, and there were some bankers. There was multinational corporation representation. There was media representation. There were some law firms involved. And together, they set out with a very small membership of only about, originally about 200 people. They now have about 325. A very small group. They set out with a mission to create this new international economic order. And the first thing they did was hijack the executive branch of the most powerful nation on earth, economically speaking. That's us. When mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter was elected, both Jimmy Carter, Walter Mondale, both members of the Trilateral Commission, and Carter swept in almost one-third of the entire U.S. membership into his cabinet positions and State Department positions. He stacked the deck with these people. And this was the guy, by the way, who said, "I will never lie to you." And he also said he was just a poor peanut farmer from Georgia and didn't know anybody inside the Beltway at all.
Right.
You know, who would I appoint? And then it turns around and he appoints all these people from the Trilateral Commission. What a crock.
Yeah.
But we've had this domination ever since, and these people are the ones who have sunk our ship in this country. And I'll tell you what, we need to pin the tail on the donkey where it belongs. These are the perpetrators, the people who have created the policies behind our back, brought them in and implemented them in our own government with taxpayer money. And they have resulted in the destruction of the American economy and the American experiment. What we have today is their fault and hardly anybody else's.
And as I remember, Bill Clinton is a member of the Trilateral Group, and so are George Bush Sr. and Jeb Bush, I think, but not George.
Yeah, Jeb Bush. No, Jeb Bush is not. But
is
remember,
not. Okay.
Daddy Bush was.
Right,
a member.
Right. And
so
Bill
they're very
Clinton
closely
is,
connected.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Clinton and Al Gore both were members. Dick Cheney, of course.
Right.
And Obama and Biden are not, I don't think, the buffoons that they are, I don't think they could ever be accepted into the Trilateral Commission membership. But I will say they are surrounded with them, or that is Biden and Obama are surrounded with them. The entire intelligence apparatus at the top level are all members of the Trilateral Commission. Like Susan Rice, for instance, is the current National Security Advisor. She's a member.
Perfect. Yes.
Before her was Tom Donilon, and General James Jones was also an NSA. I mean, these people have they're just dominating completely all over Obama.
Well, and it's like our presidential office. Look, it's been, you know, for how many years now, either a Bush or Clinton, or, you know, like the same people over and over, these same people in power, and they build this dynasty. And that's basically what the Trilateral Commission, they're a group of global elitists who do whatever they want and gear movement of the United States or whatever economy they're dealing with towards a certain way. I mean, they have that control and power to do that. And we just allow them to keep doing it. We keep electing people who are connected to the Trilateral Commission, and it's not helping us. I want to talk a little bit, too, now about, I don't know if everybody knows about it, but the drought in California. And basically, we're withholding water, and this is the way I say it, we're withholding water from the people of California based upon what they're claiming to be a smelt fish. I think there's probably like one. So that it won't be harmed. Meantime, the people of California, individuals, are being threatened with, you know, we're going to come and penalize you for taking too long of a shower and drinking water will be next. Tell us about how technocracy is connected to all that.
Well, the easiest way, or the most direct way that I see, is by talking about smart meters. A lot of people have an idea that smart meters are not good for America. They're not good for people. Those are the digital meters that sit on side of your homes and businesses now that are being pushed all over America. And most people have only talked about it in terms of just the electricity that's delivered to your home. And they can look inside your home and communicate with your major appliances and stuff to control them directly, with or without your consent. This smart grid program is a pure technocracy play from the 1930s. They knew that they had to control energy and the distribution of energy if they were going to control the economy, according to technocracy. So what isn't mentioned too much is that the smart meter protocol also has in mind the delivery of natural gas and water as well. And so this isn't quite as prevalent across the country yet, but in the cases where you have water being delivered to cities by the same utility that provides the gas and or the electricity, water is also on the meter to determine how much water that you use. So water is a huge issue with these global elitists. They see water as a means of control, and indeed it is, because we can't live without it. So
correct.
Creating a shortage is the first thing. They created a shortage in energy and told us we need to have smart meters. They create a shortage in water and tell us we need to have our water ration. They tell us there's a shortage one day it's going to be on natural gas. They have to limit our natural gas consumption. And the shortages here are the key. They have to manufacture a shortage so that they can declare an emergency that needs to be managed. And I might add, they tried to do the very same thing back in the 70s with Jimmy Carter, where you may not remember it. I don't know exactly how old you are, but there was a huge contrived energy shortage in the 70s where the price of gas went through the roof, where America all of a sudden was just in horrible shape for importing oil. The Arabs were withholding it from us, and we didn't have enough production to sustain ourselves. And all of a sudden, energy prices just went through the roof based on this completely fabricated shortage of energy. Yeah, we've seen this. This is old stuff. This is not new stuff at all. But here we see the same thing today. In all these different areas, we see the same thing. Shortage, shortage, shortage. Control, control, control. And I think California is just the forerunner of that right now.
Absolutely. And California caused it. And I'll say that, the government of California, the people in quote-unquote in charge, they could have built reservoirs. They didn't. They had the ability to build desalination plants, and they won't. Take a look at Israel. It's a complete desert, and they're fine because they built those plants, and they have plenty of water. California doesn't want the people of California to have that water, and people say, well, that's just crazy California. But things that happen and start in California generally sweep across the nation, just like you're saying with smart meters and grids and all that. So don't be surprised if that doesn't, come into your neighborhood. I want to kind of go on to another subject because we're always going to run out of time when all this stuff really gets good. There's so much to talk about. I want to talk about, we talked a little bit about climate change. I want to talk about climate change and the Catholic doctrine that goes along with it while we're on that subject.
Oh, my. Well, that's a good one. I have to say that all of the major religions of the world today, that is the religious organizations like the Catholic Church, the Episcopal Church, the Presbyterian Church, the Church of Christ, all the biggies have gone green. Their websites are just completely wrapped up with sustainable development, this and that. Much of it is predicated on the fact that, that man has some responsibility to, to steward and protect the earth, and therefore, sustainable development is a good thing, and everybody needs to go along with it. Well, just recently, a few weeks ago, the Pope of the Catholic Church gave a speech on climate change, and he announced that he is going to write a major encyclical on climate change in June and have it ready for the big United Nations confab that's going to take place this November, where climate change is going to hopefully, according to them, hopefully be pushed forward in a major way throughout the world, because you know, like Al Gore says, if we don't do it quickly, we're all going to die or something like that. So so the Catholic Church is behind this lock, stock, and barrel. And I have to add that for Catholics that you realize that it's not church official church doctrine in the sense that God has spoken to the Pope over this. When that happens, he'll issue a papal bull, you know, and he'll pass that around. That will be the law of the church, if you will. An encyclical, however, is extremely influential and powerful, and it goes out to all the bishops around the world, and they in turn will pass the same document down to all the, you know, individual churches and stuff, and pretty much everybody will line up behind what the Pope is saying. But the Pope is saying basically, come on, guys, climate change is in, everything else is out. And if we take what Al Gore said just not, I think, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, giving a speech on climate change as usual, he said everybody that doesn't believe in climate change is a denier. That's a term of derision, you denier, you. And so us deniers, he said, deserve to be punished. He used that exact word, punished. And so if you deny climate change, which is basically a religious proposition at this point, then you deserve one way or another to be punished. Now, fortunately, he didn't specify what punished means. I honestly don't want to know.
Exactly.
I don't like the sounds of it, because no American should utter such a statement from their mouth over any issue that where somebody disagrees with you. Just should not
right.
be the case. Not in America.
Well, and it's also so funny that all the time we hear separation of church and state, you know, all the time, except now we have the government coming out with climate change and making a big deal out of it. We have to spend all this money because the earth is going to, you know, burn up and freeze or whatever the case may be the day that they're talking about it. And now we're going to get the church, you know, the big Catholic Church to go along with it by having the Pope come out and sort of make a directive saying, this is what we need to do. And so it's very interesting.
Well, you know, the separation of church and state only has to do with Christianity. It doesn't
exactly.
have to do with any other religion whatsoever. And in fact, I can we don't have time right now, but I could demonstrably prove that the whole climate change mantra has every earmark of religion under the sun. It is a religion. The underlying philosophy of it is scientism. It has a belief system that cannot be definitively proven. It's just their opinion. That's what they believe. Fine. But when they set themselves up as a priesthood who goes to the oracle of science to listen carefully to see what science says, and then they come down from the mountain, if you will, with their own tablets, you know, with the Ten Commandments of Sustainable Development, and say, well, you know, I, the high priest, have heard the oracle of science, and it said you need to do these 10 things or you're going to be punished. You know, that's exactly the message. This is a religion, and it's being forced on us by our own government. Christians
mm-hmm.
have just been completely asleep on this. There's no separation of church and state for these people. They're taking
no.
this, turning it into a religion, and cramming it down our throat and telling us if we don't believe it, they're going to punish us.
Right.
That's insanity.
And it's unfortunate. It is insanity, and it's unfortunate because the people of the Catholic Church, you know, who look up to the Pope and follow what the Pope says, you know, most of them will go right along with it, not even knowing anything what you just said about technocracy. They'll just think it's something, you know, okay, we need to do it, the Pope said so, and they won't question it. And that's very sad. In talking now a little bit more about religion, let's talk about the religious freedoms and what's going on with technocracy involved in, you know, making wedding cakes for gay weddings and all the trouble that's going on with that with Christians. Talk a little bit about that.
Wow. Well, it's kind of hard to relate that directly to the movement of technocracy
mm-hmm.
and the implementation of technocracy, but it's kind of a sidebar to everything else that's going on in America today. This causes incredible division and pressure in society to divide. And this hasn't brought people together in America. This hasn't brought neighborhoods together. It hasn't brought individuals together. This has divided people. And I have to say, our president and these technocrats, they're masters at dividing people in their own home territory. Now, I am not pro the homosexual movement, but I want to say that in America, if you practice something that other people have a problem with, or maybe they wouldn't do it, there's been a history in America that we're still Americans and we tolerate each other as long as we don't try and shove our positions down somebody else's throat. And that we've existed that way for years. You know, I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, and my parents had friends who were homosexuals. I didn't agree with them, but neither did I go out and pound on them, and they didn't pound on me. But today,
exactly,
all of a sudden, you have all these divisions in our country, whether it's racial division or whether it's societal division over issues like homosexuality. It's absolutely insane. It does not need to exist, but we can see these policies have been implemented purposely and methodically over the last 20 years at the same pace that technocracy has been developing. That's not enough to say that they're both closely related, but one of the ways to sink a country is to divide the people within the country so they can no longer communicate with each other on issues about their country. And we just can't do that anymore. There's whole segments of our society that you and I no longer can communicate with in any meaningful way about issues pertaining to America as a country. Just
absolutely
not.
I know. It's kind of like, you know, the mind is made up. That's it. Not going to listen. This is what I've been told. This is what I believe. And it's working on the other side. They're really convincing people that everybody, you know, is against them, and they shouldn't even listen to other people on the right. So since we're talking about religion and we have a few minutes left, I'm gonna throw a wrench in there for you. End times, are we there yet?
Yes. Well, you know, that good question. I don't know that we are. I feel like if I was to say look at the signs of the times today, we have an environment where it's looking suspiciously comfortable leading up to the events in the book of Revelation. And I think that those who are given to studying Bible prophecy should make a careful study of technocracy with the question in mind, does this have any end time significance? Personally, I believe it does. That's just from my own personal study of the book of Revelation and what I know about technocracy. I think it has a lot to do with it. And, you know, I remember back in the 70s and the 80s when the first scanners came out, IBM made a scanner for a grocery store. And
right,
they started showing up at Safeway, I think it was, at first. And, oh, my gosh, the Christian community just went nuts. Oh, no, it's the mark of the beast, the barcodes, and I'm not gonna walk through there. That thing's going to put a, you know, a mark on my forehead or something and tattoo it in. They went nuts over that. And, you know, whatever excitement existed back in the 60s and 70s over Bible prophecy has by and large been lost today in the Christian world. But I think the study of and understanding of technocracy and scientific dictatorship, I think it has a lot of merit to study that alongside of Bible prophecy. And that's not happening today. I'd like to see that change. But, you know, we'll see if the Christian world, you know, picks up on this and has anything to say about it. I'd like them to. I'd like to see some more study done on it. But that's my answer.
Yeah, and I think I'd have to agree with you, because we, you know, we see things that are happening that we've never seen before, things that are principles that we've grown up with are so rapidly changing to something we don't even recognize. And we're seeing our country and individual rights as well as everything else sort of change, and we're losing control and we're being sort of swept under by this current, you know. And I think it, in some ways, it does go along with Revelation and seeing things that, you know, you don't recognize, not understanding things, or the mind's just you know, overwhelmed with everything that's going on that we see. So I think it is a good idea if people, you know, would take a look at it and read your book. Again, I can't emphasize to everybody enough, pick up a copy of Technocracy Rising by Patrick Wood. It's really something that needs to be read. It's something that needs to be shared. You need to tell people about this book so that they can open their eyes and see what's going on. I know that people that follow me on Twitter, I'm always talking to them and saying, hey, did you read the book yet? Did you read the book yet? Because I really want them to get it, and I really want them to pass this knowledge and information on to somebody else, because it's hard to fight something that you have no knowledge about. And if you don't, educate yourself, we have no chance at all.
Yes, I agree. And we said, when I wrote Trilat Is Over Washington back in the late 70s, and I look back at that now, but 20, 30 years later, if Anthony Sutton were alive today, he would agree with me fully, and he would say just four words, I told you so. And we had these people nailed back then, and not enough people paid attention, if any, to what we had written back then. The good news at this point, if there is any to the I told you so nonsense, is that I'm telling you so again, and now you have a second chance to make it right.
Absolutely.
And now's the time not to pussyfoot with this, but to get into it and understand who the enemy is. And if there is any hope for America, it can only come about by fighting the right enemy. We cannot defeat an enemy we do not know. Period.
We must
know who the enemy is.
Yeah, we will have absolutely no chance. And this is a good book to have people read before they go out and vote. In the event, let's say that, Hillary and Jeb Bush are looking for the nomination there, it's a good time to start now to understand what's really going on and not to be fooled by these people, and to try to get the word out to other individuals about it. Your website, again, is technocracyrising.com. And I know people can go there if they have other questions. And what's a good way for them to get in touch with you if they want to drop you an email?
Well, they can do that right on technocracyrising.com. There's a contact form, and it's easy to drop a note there, and I'll respond
Perfect.
To everybody that writes. You bet.
Perfect. So in case they have some additional questions, I know that, we didn't get to a lot of things. I mean, there's just so much going on, you can't possibly get to everything. I know we're going to have you back on in the future. If you can come back on as things develop, you can point these things out more and more as they come along, and I think that will help people to really begin to see how much they've been asleep to.
Yes, I think that's good. Save your questions that you didn't get to, and we'll pick up right where we left off.
Absolutely, I will. I have a whole bunch of them here, and I'm just going to go through them again, save them, and I'm sure I'll be adding to them as things go on. So, again, I thank you so much for being with us tonight, and, take care, and, continue to write, because I know this is a message that people need to hear, and I know you speak at a lot of different events and things like that, so I hope people will catch you at different talks that you give and at different places that you are, and keep in touch with what's going on in the unfortunate world of technocracy.
Yes, indeed, and I really appreciate your dedication to getting this message out. And I will say, folks, that it's not this book is not about me; it's about the message that's in the book. if I never made a nickel on the book, it's not about that. It's about the message in the book. This is about the survival of America as we know it today.
Very well said, Patrick. Thank you again so much, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, Susan. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you. Well, there you have it. I really do hope that you will at least consider buying this book. It is so important to have this book, and like I said, to keep it as a handbook, because there is so much that you're going to want to go back to again and again and say, oh my gosh, I never thought about it this way. This book will change the way that you look at your government, at your local city, leadership, everything. So please pick up a copy. And until next week, God bless you all. Stay safe, and we'll see you back here next week. Take care, everybody.